Marseillaise. Play it.
This is from Casablanca. You're listening to the Trex Radio Show, live and local in the Bay and around the world on the KGO app. And as the sun sets, we are now live, broadcasting live across the entire Western United States and Canada. I welcome to the studio John Rothman. You want to explain exactly what we just heard?
From the wonderful film Casablanca, in Rick's cafe, the Germans are singing their songs, and Rick says, "Let's sing the Marseillaise." And what more significant, powerful melody could we hear tonight in the midst of the tragedy which has hit France, in Nice, the latest report, at least 80 people killed.
It's unbelievable.
We don't know yet much about the attack other than how it took place. It turns out that the vehicle used, a large conveyor truck, had within it explosives, hand grenades, but as far as we know, this was a lone action by a lone individual. But you can see, and we understand thoroughly, the reaction of the world, its horror, because if it was one person without direction, you can see the havoc and mayhem that can be caused. And indeed, Donald Trump, who was prepared tomorrow at 11 o'clock to announce the Republican nominee for vice president, evidently, we think, Mike Pence, the governor of Indiana, has now postponed the announcement. And by the way, it puts a whole different shade on the election. Everything that we have geared up for, including the Republican convention next week, will have a whole new dimension because everyone will be looking for the next terrorist attack. Everyone will be asking, is Donald Trump and will his running mate be capable, were they to be in the White House, to handle these kinds of problems? What about the Democrats? Is Hillary Clinton up for it? Who will she take for vice president? And, of course, the president of the United States, who has been warned by the director of the CIA that an attack on this country is imminent, this kind of attack. And so there are many questions, Drex, which we will be dealing with tonight.
It's really horrific. As John just mentioned, at least 80 people were killed last night and hundreds injured as the lorry or the tractor trailer or the truck just bowled through the crowds like a bowling ball for more than a mile as families and friends watched the annual fireworks display in the streets of Nice. It's Bastille Day. And the pictures are so graphic. It's very difficult to look at.
And I must tell you, television is censoring itself in terms of what it is showing. They've shown stills that are transferred to black and white, so we don't see the blood-soaked streets or the maimed bodies or the children who were blown to smithereens by this dastardly attack. But understand that France was prepared, both during the soccer match and Bastille Day in Paris. They had troops deployed in Paris, because you cannot have troops deployed on every street corner in France.
No, you can't. And there's certainly, after the Bataclan, I have to tell you, so it's really horrific that it was in Nice. If you don't know, it's southern France, completely different area. And it looks like pro-ISIS groups are celebrating. But I don't think ISIS has taken responsibility for this yet.
No, but it has all the earmarks of a radical Islamic attack, right, whether it's Islamic State or whether it is Al-Qaeda or whether it is a lone wolf. And that's the problem, and people need to understand this. There will be all kinds of attacks, and Donald Trump began tonight saying we are weak, we are unprepared. No one is ever prepared for this kind of attack. There is no president of the United States who can ever ensure security. It is without a doubt going to be interesting to see what the Republican Platform Committee does. They are now preparing their final document. Among other things, they are committed to building the wall with Mexico. They are committed to opposing same-sex marriage. They are opposed to many of the social issues. And Mike Pence, just so we understand this, is a real, genuine conservative.
Yes, he's with the evangelical crowd, so he is.
And the Tea Party.
He's not pro-choice. He's not pro-pot. Yeah, he's not for a lot of things that California and the people of the Bay Area stand for. He's anti-gay.
Cabin Republicans, the gay Republican group, we have a very strong group here in San Francisco, are absolutely indignant at the thought of Mike Pence. But it's interesting. What Donald Trump has done is similar to what Barry Goldwater did in 1964 in this city during the Republican convention. Instead of reaching out to the moderates in his party and taking a Bill Scranton for vice president, Barry Goldwater took William E. Miller. Now, I knew Bill Miller very well. He was a very conservative congressman from Lockport, New York, Republican national chairman, but there was no attempt to be inclusive. And what Donald Trump has done, if, in fact, Mike Pence is announced, remember, we won't know tomorrow for sure. The only indication will be, and this we have to see, Pence had to remove himself as a candidate for re-election as governor by tomorrow. And then he would, of course, be able to run for the vice presidency because you can't run for vice president and governor at the same time.
Well, there's a spot open for the vice president to speak. And, you know, he's not listed as a speaker on the RNC docket. Right. So, you know, if you do the math, it kind of adds up to that.
We will know for sure tomorrow, because if the Republicans in Indiana do not have Pence as their nominee, if he is removed from the ballot as a candidate for re-election as governor, then there's no question of what happens. But if I were Donald Trump, I'd be thinking long and hard. There is no doubt that there are two fundamental issues in this campaign which are overriding issues. One is terrorism. If there is a terrorist attack, and I want you to imagine for a moment, the director of the CIA having told the nation and Barack Obama that a terrorist attack is imminent. If a terrorist attack, God forbid, should hit this country, I can assure you the Republicans will say that you were warned, Mr. President, the Democrats were warned, and you didn't act. That's one great vulnerability, and everyone needs to be aware that that's an inevitable consequence of a terrorist attack.
And by the way, for either side of the aisle, whoever will get into office, neither side can repel all things, as you just said. So whether it's a Democratic or a Republican administration, they can't stop all these things.
Please don't confuse people with the facts.
Right.
In the midst of a political campaign. The second major issue, which I think will be critical, are the social issues. And that brings us to the United States Supreme Court. Ruth Bader Ginsburg spoke her mind, and Donald Trump has called for her resignation. Now, I want to remind everybody, in her statement, she did not retreat from her position. She simply regretted that she made a public statement.
She didn't really apologize.
No. And I have to tell you that this division, which now exists in the United States on social issues, abortion will be a major issue. Remember, the Supreme Court just made a decision with 8 justices voting. It was a 5-3 decision on the Texas case of closing abortion clinics. We have a situation now where the Republican Party is opposed unalterably to same-sex marriage. We have a situation where, when you look at the Republican platform, it is, without a doubt, a complete reflection of the Tea Party. And whether Donald Trump, in light of what's happened in Paris, will now rethink what he's doing, maybe, just maybe, he needs somebody who's a real expert in foreign policy. But we will wait and see. But what we know now, tonight, is that Donald Trump is taking the Republican Party down that right road.
Okay, we'll take a break and we'll be back. 808-0810 is the number if you're outside the Bay. You want to comment or join in on the conversation. 415-808-0810. John Rothman is my guest this hour on the Drex Radio Show. But as we move forward, first, let's take a look at traffic with Lee Graham.
The next generation of KGO 810. Now, back to the Drex Radio Show. Drex Radio Show.
Thank you for joining us on the Drex Radio Show, live and local in the Bay and around the world on the KGO app. You can download it today in the App Store for free, and we KGO go wherever you go. And as the sun has set on the city of San Francisco and now broadcasting live to the entire Western United States and Canada, John Rothman is my guest. We're talking politics and, of course, the horror coming out of Nice, France tonight as terror strikes the south of France. A driver just mows bodies for a mile. What are we looking at least 80 people dead, hundreds injured. And there's just one person, right? The police killed him. But if you look at the lorry, the truck, it took a lot of shots.
It did. And evidently he got out of the lorry at one point and with a handgun or with a gun, we don't know what kind of gun, did shoot into the crowd. But what we do know is that if this was one individual, it was something horrific because it demonstrated what we have seen repeatedly. We saw it in Orlando, Florida. We've seen it in incident after incident where one person can wreak havoc. And let me tell you, when the Republicans convene in Cleveland on Monday, I can tell you security will never be tighter than what you will see there. And, of course, were I chief of police of Cleveland, I'd be sweating bullets, if you will, as long as they're there.
Well, what do they have, like 21, 22 agencies set up to, you know, basically the city's going to be in lockdown.
And that is...
And it needs to be.
That is a far cry for those of us who remember the two conventions in recent memory, or three conventions here in San Francisco, the Republicans in 56, 64, and the Democrats in 84, where basically, aside from getting into the actual hall itself, it was pretty easy to maneuver through and see people and so forth.
I have to tell you, John, so when I'm looking at Donald Trump and I, you know, look in, I don't know, try to look inside his head through the orange, the lens, I just think that he's trying to obviously help to win. And I think that Pence is a good idea probably politically because he is so far right. But he is so far right. And I just can't see them dancing together. They don't agree on everything. I mean, because Pence himself came out against the Islamic and the Muslim ban.
Right? Yeah, right. And he also endorsed Cruz in the Indiana
right.
primary.
Yes.
But look, let's understand, what is Donald Trump trying to do? I understand it completely.
He's just trying to win.
He knows that if he brings Pence on, Republicans who know that Donald Trump is not a Republican, that he is not a conservative.
Thank you.
He's
not an evangelical.
That's right. They will then have that enthusiastic way of saying, but Mike Pence is with us. And that hopefully ameliorates that. But now let me point out what he has not been able to do. He has not been able to reach out to the middle of America. The minute you take someone like Pence, who is anti a woman's right to choose, anti-gay marriage, someone who, by the way, supported the war in Iraq, and you will recall that Donald Trump says he didn't, when you have that kind of balance, and it is an interesting balance, when you have New York and Indiana is the mother state of vice presidents. Remember, they have more vice presidents than any other state of the union.
Right, right.
So there is a logic, but here's the key. Pence might not have been reelected. It appeared that Pence was
gubernatorial.
That's
yes,
right. That
yes.
he was headed for defeat. You have Evan Bayh, the former governor and former senator, the son of Birch Bayh, who has jumped back in and is running for the United States Senate, may pick up that seat for the Democrats, which means the Democrats would be on the way to controlling the Senate. From the point of view of Indiana, which, let's remember, went for Obama in 08 and for Romney in 12. It means that Indiana is a swing state, and they want to make sure they can appeal. I can tell you, having talked to friends in Indiana today, that the bet is that Hillary will beat Trump there decisively, and Pence adds very little from that point of view.
Oh, probably, for sure, I would agree, especially if he was not going to take the gubernatorial race. One of the things that I think is very unusual when I look at this entire race, I don't ever remember a time in my life when there was this circus surrounding the VP status, or who's going to be the VP.
Oh, no,
the
way we've this, had it. Do you remember?
Even though the politics that are being played on both sides with who's going to be the VP.
Let me remind everybody that I'll just begin with recent times. In 1976, Jimmy Carter had Walter Mondale, Adlai Stevenson, Frank Church, Birch Bayh, a whole group come down to be interviewed in Plains. Very exciting until he settled on Mondale. Ronald Reagan, in 1980, went through the whole thing about maybe choosing Gerry Ford. And only when Ford bowed out did he end up deciding to go with Bob Dole. We saw, that was in 76, we saw in 80 George Bush ultimately come in. We have seen this play out. I remember one of my great mistakes on this radio station was in 2004 when I triumphantly announced with absolute certainty that the Democratic nominee for vice president was going to be Dick Gephardt of Missouri. And, of course, it ended up 10 minutes later they announced John Edwards. So there are, and who in the world would have predicted Sarah Palin? There was a real effort to get Joe Lieberman, but why didn't they take Joe? Because he was pro-choice and the Republicans That's would right. never accept it.
Yeah, yes, he was pretty much a moderate.
So you do have this kind of display, because otherwise, and I say this with deep sadness, there is no drama to a convention.
Well, I must say, let's you just stumbled into something very interesting, and I think that is Sarah Palin. Now, she was paraded out in front, and so, you know, it was a big deal for her to endorse Trump, but it seems to me that he was almost embarrassed to have her on stage, and then after that initial endorsement, she went away.
And she's not speaking.
She's not saying a word.
And she's not speaking at the convention.
Yeah.
And when the Trump people were asked why she wasn't coming to Cleveland,
yes,
they said, well, it's too far to travel from Alaska.
They don't want her up there looking like a fool, because that's what the endorsement looked like. He was most uncomfortable in his own orange skins,
Drex,
standing up there.
You may know I have a massive library, and I collect signed and inscribed books. And I have Donald Trump's book, Crippled America, inscribed by Donald Trump and Sarah Palin. Just wanted you to know that.
That's a goodie. That's a goodie. So let's talk about what could have been also, and where, for the life of me, I just can't imagine Newt Gingrich being involved in anything after he was run out of Washington in 1999. I mean, it was a disgrace.
Newt Gingrich is a powerful voice. He was the number two contender for the vice presidency. There is no doubt, because Donald Trump has expressed this, he values the friendship of Newt Gingrich. They are really friends. They have vacationed together. They played golf together. Gingrich is a valued part of the Trump team. He came that close, very close, to being the Republican nominee for vice president. And he is going to play a very important role as a bulldog in this campaign.
I heard a rumor that he may be, and this doesn't make any sense to me, chief of staff. Why would Newt Gingrich want to be chief of staff?
Newt Gingrich, first of all, really loves public service, likes to be in the center of the action.
Absolutely.
And let me remind you, there is precedent for this, and most people don't remember this. Ronald Reagan brought the former Senate Majority Leader Howard Baker into the White House to be White House Chief of Staff, because Howard Baker knew how the Senate worked, knew how the House worked, knew how Washington worked, and it was a big help to Ronald Reagan. The same thing applies here. If Donald Trump were to be president of the United States, Newt Gingrich brings a depth of knowledge.
He does, but it seems to me it would be beneath him.
No, I don't think so. I think when you have been in public service and you have nowhere to go,
right,
and someone asks you back in, you're thrilled. It's sort of
it's like a desperation thing.
It's once having been a radio talk show host, you're asked to come in as a guest on the Drex program. You don't say no. You come right. I mean, you understand there
I totally agree. So it's the same thing with the love affair of the microphone, and the business is the same thing with politics, as people are passionate about whatever they do in life.
But when you have had a taste of something, I was very close to Harold Stassen, and as you know, I'm his biographer. Governor Stassen ran for president 10 times and became a national political joke. But Harold Stassen once came very close to the White House, very significant advisor to Dwight Eisenhower, almost negotiated a nuclear test ban treaty. Even when in later years people viewed him as a joke, he said to me, my public activity, my running for president, may be a joke to some, but it's a forum for me to express my opinions. If Newt Gingrich is the White House chief of staff, remember, please, that a White House chief of staff who has the trust of the president is one of the most powerful individuals in Washington.
Amen to that. On that point, we'll take a point. We'll take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the Democrats and Bernie. Bernie mentions Hillary zero times during his 23-minute speech. And what is happening with the Dems? That's coming up next with John Rothman on the Drex Radio Show. With a look at traffic, here's Lee Graham.
Drex on KGO 810.
A little bit of politics. Okay, maybe a lot of politics. John Rothman is in the studio. He's the man to talk about politics with here at KGO. And he is my guest this hour, and I thank him very much for coming in. So it's very interesting. We'll get to the Dems in a second. But when we talk about some of the Republican convention speakers that are coming up next week, you're seeing a lot of unconventional people. And Tim Tebow, yes, Tim Tebow comes to mind. What's going on? You're not seeing the heavyweights. The politicos, the heavyweight politicos are staying away.
The heavyweights are not coming. Both former presidents, George H.W. and George W., the two previous Republican nominees for president, Mitt Romney and John McCain, are all saying they won't attend. And it turns out that between 18 and 20, Republicans who are members of the United States Senate are not attending the convention.
Is that a bad look for Trump?
I have to tell you what it really means for Trump from my point of view. A divided Republican Party cannot win an election. And so Donald Trump has a real problem. He can't just put on a show. He has to be able to convince Republicans that the party really is unified. And let me tell you, the biggest problem the Republicans have is they're not unified.
No, they're not.
The people who oppose Trump, and I have to tell you, the platform, which is evolving, and the nomination of Mike Pence, if that's what Trump ultimately announces, does not augur well.
Is there still going to be the sneaker attack with the Never Trump, the hashtag Never Trumps?
Yeah, but they don't mean anything. They
right.
haven't got
I
the
mean,
votes.
Romney really blew it with all of that.
Let me tell you, I watched the Stop Goldwater movement here in San Francisco in 64.
Yes.
But it was a united movement. You had Goldwater as the nominee, but you had Nelson Rockefeller. You had George Romney. You had Bill Scranton. At Richard Nixon, in a way, in the background, Henry Cabot Lodge Jr., you had powers in the Republican Party. They came to the convention. They fought on the floor of the convention. I remember it. I was at that convention every step of the way. In this convention, the anti-Trump people are really staying away. You have a couple of delegates. Even Ted Cruz threw in the towel. Cruz has decided he's going to speak at the convention. So there is no viable opposition to Donald Trump that will emerge on the floor of the convention as of tonight.
Oh, you don't think so?
No.
No chaos. Chaos free.
No. Let's differentiate between what happens on the floor of the convention and what happens outside the convention.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, outside it's called.
On the floor of the convention, I believe Trump will be in complete command. The Republican Party establishment, that is Rance Priebus, the chairman, and Paul Ryan. I listened to Paul Ryan. I watched Paul Ryan in the town meeting the other evening on CNN. He has made clear he has differences with Donald Trump, but he is going to stay within the tent. Poor Paul Ryan. And I say this with some sincerity, perhaps a little sarcasm. He is torn between two emotions.
He really is. And
his conscience and his party.
And no, it comes off that way too, John. It really does. Yeah.
So my expectation is that there will not be a dynamic anti-Trump movement. Where will the anti-Trump movement emerge? After the convention. You will then see a coalition of leading Republicans who will say, we're not campaigning for him, we're not going to raise money for him, and the Republicans will build up a campaign war chest for Republican candidates for Congress across the country, because they understand that if Trump loses in a landslide, they'll not only lose the Senate, but the Democrats could, in fact, win the House. Highly unlikely, but Nancy Pelosi really believes it's possible.
Yes, she does. And tomorrow, by the way, Chip Franklin's going to be speaking with Barbara Boxer.
So which is excellent. Barbara, yes. By the way, who eloquently represented Hillary Clinton in Nevada, was very outspoken in her point of view. She is retiring from the United States Senate, but she will be a power nonetheless.
Let's talk about the Dems. So, Elizabeth Warren?
Elizabeth Warren is extremely articulate, extremely effective. She is on the short list for vice president. People ask, is it possible you could have two women on a ticket? Yes, it is. And more than that, Massachusetts, however, is a solidly Democratic state. Hillary will carry it. So what does she bring to the ticket? And I want to point out, and I don't say this to be ageist, but I want you to know she is 67 years old, and Hillary Clinton is almost 70. So you're dealing there with another factor. Which
Let's look at what is Trump. Trump is 70, so
he is
could be
70 years old.
Yeah, okay, so he could be 78 by the end. I mean, if he does two terms,
right? And Pence was born in 1959, so he's not getting any younger either. He is 57 years old.
Well, I think both sides of the aisle need to infuse young blood. And let's talk about the Dems for a second,
yeah,
because
sure.
Julian Castro. Great man out of San Antonio.
Okay, I have for those of you who have been listening to me here on KGO, whether I was on with Ron or Pat or with you, I've said that if I were Hillary Clinton, I would take Julian Castro.
Yes.
He is 41 years old. His brother serves in Congress. He's a former mayor of San Antonio. He gave the stellar speech at the Democratic Convention in 2012. He has now been in Washington for 4 years. He was brought there to groom him for the job. Hillary Clinton sort of gave a tip in my mind, but maybe I'm wrong. I'm wrong on vice presidential selections repeatedly. But it is, she said she thinks she can carry Texas. If Hillary Clinton has any possibility of carrying Texas, she has to have Castro on the ticket.
That, I would agree. You know, one of the guys who I really liked a lot, and I worked in San Antonio back in the day, was Henry Cisneros. I just thought he got the short end of the stick.
He did, and he had legal problems.
That was the end. But I thought that a lot of it was not really necessary.
Let me say a word.
They just drug him right through the mud.
You're right. Let me say a word about Senator Brown of Ohio. Ohio is a critical swing state. I would remind everybody, no Republican has ever been elected president without carrying Ohio. The idea that Senator Brown could be the nominee for vice president with Hillary Clinton has great appeal from the point of view of a state which is critical in terms of a Democratic victory. So he is a possibility. And, of course, there are others that are listed, but, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
Let me ask you about, let's go back to the Supreme Court, because it is big, it's a big, big deal in this next upcoming election. If we, God forbid, have to go down to the Electoral College again, and there's another Florida, and there's another 2002, what a mess this is going to be with Ruth, I mean, with Ginsburg. Is she going to have to recuse herself?
First of all, Clarence Thomas had a child who worked for George Bush. Antonin Scalia's daughter worked for George Bush in 2000. Neither one of them recused themselves. I would remind you that Sandra Day O'Connor, on the night of the election when it appeared that Gore had won, stormed out of an event in disgust. None of them recused themselves. The Supreme Court justice in that situation, I don't think, would recuse him or herself. What Ruth Bader Ginsburg did was not unprecedented, although her public expression shocked people because, well, you don't expect
you don't hear
the Supreme
them.
Court.
I think
it is very clear that she intends to remain there. She enjoys the job. I don't think she'll leave if Trump is elected president. She'll stay as long as she can. If Hillary becomes president, she'll feel a lot better because she does not want to see a conservative-dominated court. I've pointed this out before, Drex, but let me do it one more time. I knew Bill Rehnquist very well. I met Bill here in San Francisco in 1964, and we kept in touch through the years. When he wrote his book on impeachment, he appeared on my show here on KGO. I used to kid him and say, how many presidents have you served under? And he would say, I've never served under any. I served with Nixon. Use your fingers, ladies and gentlemen. Nixon, Ford, Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, and Bush.
Nice.
Seven presidents between 1971 and his death in 2005. The next president of the United States will frame the court in his or her image. And therefore, when people say to me, oh, I can't vote for X or I can't vote for Y, I say then vote for the next Supreme Court.
That's a good way to look at it because, let's face it, both sides of the aisle, both, whether you're Democrat or you're Republican or you're, you know, independent and you're going to decide with your heart and your soul, it's a tough choice because I think a lot of us, I think a lot of people feel like me. I don't like either choice.
Okay, that was in my informal poll in Disney World, where I spent about 2 weeks, and in Orlando. I can tell you that that was the general consensus of everybody I spoke with.
Right, right.
But I do think it is very important to understand that people hate Hillary Clinton. They hate her. But they fear Donald Trump. And the question will be, what Trump's hate or fear? And let me say a word about Bernie Sanders, because you asked me. I can't remember on the air or off the air. Bernie Sanders is going to campaign enthusiastically for Hillary Clinton.
He gave a 23-minute speech and didn't mention her once.
Only at the end. But I would suggest to you that the fear of Donald Trump is so overwhelming. And Bernie has said he will campaign across the country. I believe that he will. I do want to observe that, and it's an interesting statistic. In 1968, when Bobby Kennedy was killed, George Wallace was running as an independent. One-third of Bobby Kennedy's voters voted for George Wallace. And one-third, I should put it a different way, one-third of George Wallace's voters had voted for Bobby Kennedy. That's the more precise way of putting it. I apologize for the mix-up there. And the same thing applies now. The latest polls indicate that about a third of Bernie Sanders voters will vote for Donald Trump. Because when you draw a circle...
I don't believe that it'll right, be... I just can't imagine it's that high of a number.
Well, that's... If you look, it's today's polls, so, you know, whether you agree with a poll... I always remember the polls that said Alf Landon was going to win, Tom Dewey was going to win, John Kerry was going to win. So you can do what you want with polls. Look,
Brexit, yes, no. Yeah.
You saw the poll today. Yeah. The poll that said 40% of Americans will vote for Trump, 40% will vote for Clinton. And people say, oh, my God, they're tied. Rubbish, I say.
There's still another 20%.
Right, and take a look at the Electoral College. You've got to sit down state by state. Remember, the presidential campaign is not a national campaign. It is a state-by-state campaign. Four times in American history, 1824, 1876, 1888, and 2000. The person who won the popular vote lost in the Electoral College. I don't think it'll happen this time.
And every time it happens, we say we've had enough. We'll continue with our conversation with John Rothman in just a minute on the Drex Radio Show. But first, with a look at traffic, here's Lee Graham.
Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
And we're back, and John Rothman is my guest, and we're talking politics, and we're pretty sure that it'll be Mike Pence will be the Republican vice president candidate tomorrow. We shall see. Obviously.
No, he's postponed. He's postponed the announcement.
Well, until
because tomorrow. Of the terrorist attack. He may do it over the weekend. He may do it later. He wants to give it a decent interval.
Okay. Let's take a call here. Lee in San Jose, thank you for holding here on KGO.
Yes. I know. Mr. Rothman is a highly educated man and knows a lot about contemporary politics and political history. And I remember years ago when I was studying Jefferson and his concepts of human nature, and he was discussing politics. He says, if you want to know how humanity operates in a political system, study the Romans. It's all happened before. You can read Gibbon's The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. Tacitus, the Annals, Plutarch, Cicero, and when the Roman Republic was falling apart, the fanatics came to the fore. The people on the streets became extremely violent. The political system started coming apart.
Okay, let me answer you by saying the United States is not falling apart. I remember 1968, which was an election which we really thought we were falling apart, Lee. We're not falling apart. What we're doing is trying to find ourselves in a very troubled world. We have the rise of radical Islam, which we have seen again tonight in Paris wreak havoc. We have seen clearly and precisely what can happen when there is an economic collapse or when our economies wobble. We understand that. But I have a faith in America. We have rejected extremism in the past. We rejected Barry Goldwater in 1964. We rejected George McGovern in 1972. And by the way, I knew Barry Goldwater very well. And many of you recall George McGovern loved being on my show. We were very good friends. I can tell you without any hesitation that I have great faith in the American people. Ultimately, we make the right decision. We may stumble toward it, but this is the greatest nation in the world, and I believe it will remain so for the foreseeable future.
I think you're right. And I look back at the Bush presidency and a lot of us thought, wow, I want to move. I want to get out of here. But we got through it.
We do. We get through everything. And that is because the fundamental sense of decency of the American people, reflected by the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, yes, the Bill of Rights, we are a people governed by ideas. And as long as those ideas can be debated, left and right, we will be a vital, vibrant democracy.
Let me ask you, John, with the terror strike in the south of France, with we're pushing 80, over 80 people died on Bastille Day. Counterterrorism. The world needs to come together and do something. What do you think that thing is?
Okay, Hillary Clinton said it today that, and I thought very ably, that we have to strengthen NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. We need to work with our Arab allies, recognizing that they are not really prepared to pull all of their weight because they are threatened internally. But fundamentally, we have to understand that radical Islam is not rational, that they don't need an army, because Drex, this is not a war tank against tank,
no.
plane against plane, no. soldier against soldier, gun against gun. This is a different kind of war. And only when the world awakens to the horror and tries desperately to contain it will we succeed. Better intelligence sharing, very important. But let me give you what I think was the lesson of today. If this was a lone action, one man getting into a truck, a big truck, and deciding to plow through a group of people, there's no way to prevent that. What we can't do is allow that to govern the very fear which we know we feel. We have to be able to master that and do the best we can to rebuild. One of the things that makes this campaign so difficult, and I guarantee this, Donald Trump started it today when he said we are weak, we are not effective. If the American people buy that argument, they're making a huge, I use that word advisedly, mistake, because America is strong. But remember what you can and can't control. You cannot control these lone wolves, and that's the simple truth.
Yes, domestic or foreign.
Exactly.
We've got them both going on.
And by the way, let me draw a difference, too. Somebody asked whether what happened in one of the shootings that took place, whether against one of the police officers, was it a terrorist attack? And they said yes. We need to draw a difference between that kind of terrorism and the international terrorism, because there is a difference. It is a distinct difference. It is one thing to target police officers, as these horrible people have done, but it is another thing when you have an radical Islamic group targeting a nation or a way of life. And that's not just the United States. It's France. It's England. It's Europe. It's the world. And that is something we have to bear in mind.
Do you think that the people of the UK, I just wonder where their head is tonight with the entire Brexit thing, because they so wanted to be independent and out of the EU and control their own destiny.
Let me tell you, in Disney World, there were a surprising number of people from Scotland, Ireland, and England. And every single person I talked to, no matter what age, I would ask them the same question. They all believe the withdrawal now is a terrible mistake. Scotland most assuredly is going to become an independent country. The only reason they stayed in the United Kingdom was because of the euro. And now they're going to go their own way too. The implications for what happened in that vote are profound. They will affect us economically, politically, and socially in the days and weeks and months ahead.
All right, John Rothman, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure when you're in the studio. Fantastic, and we look forward to your next visit, and we will be talking all of this out through the conventions, and as the conventions wrap up and the election creeps closer, we'll continue the chat. All right, we'll take a break, and we'll be back, and we'll start the late-night Late Show wrap-up on the Trex Radio Show on KGOA 10.